It's another edition of the Falls Cast, brought to you by the Falls Free Press in beautiful Quagga Falls, Ohio, where today, Sunday, January 9th, it's no longer snowing.
No, but it's winter.
Yeah, it's rainy. It's cold.
Rain,
really cold.
We want the snow.
Climate change, baby.
No snow.
I'm fine with 55 degree winter days.
I am. Just yep. saying. I will take that.
I'd be
I know it's bad for the environment, but. Days.
But I selfishly want it to be warmer.
I can't stand the grayness anymore. I think it's starting to really get to me.
My backyard is mud, so that's what I don't like.
How long have you lived in Ohio?
I know.
Ohio.
On today's show, we have all of our favorite Fallscasters.
Well, it's a party up here.
Patrick's not here, but.
Yes, but Patrick hasn't been on the show in a while either.
It's true.
Yes, sir. He's busy.
It's true. Bart does hate
Patrick. He's young and. You know,
Patrick, have
whatever. What?
Yeah, he's out.
What does that mean? Oh, man.
I think you know.
Ouch. Don't come at me like that, man.
Come at me, bro.
So we have Mike and Suzanne Searle.
Hello.
Hello, everybody. I still despise you, Alex.
Oh, despise.
We have a new word.
A little bit. Yeah.
New word in 2022.
He's learning.
It's only two syllables.
Word of the day.
How's that calendar going?
He got a thesaurus for Christmas.
His hatred is elevated.
We have Stephen and Jennifer Mulay.
Hello.
Howdy doodly do.
We have Cassie McMenemy.
Good morning.
We have Mr. Alexander Hall.
Thank you. Hello. And a special hello to my best friend, Mike Searle. How's it going, buddy? Good to see you.
I hate you. Hate.
Oh, boy. Jeez.
Love you, too,
okay,
man.
Now we have demonic possession to add in. Come on, now.
And finally, myself, Bart Sullivan, moderating
Yay.
The show.
Bart.
Hurting
Bart,
the cats.
Trying to.
On today's Fallscast, we will have an interview.
Ooh,
will
a we? Secret surprise
will
interview.
We? Mystery.
Who is it?
It's simple, isn't
we
it?
We don't even know. Surprise
we will
to
have
us.
An interview, though.
Surprise to us.
We're fairly certain there will be an interview, but who will it be?
What are we talking, like 95.3% or 62.4%? What's the
People
odds?
People are clearly chomping at the bit to be on our show, so.
It's so true. We have to. We have to schedule all of them. There's so many people coming to us.
Schedule.
It's a Google Calendar. It's just like.
Is it?
Lots of colorful boxes.
We continue to encourage our readers and listeners to shop local. So as always, please keep your money in the falls. You guys go anywhere cool this week?
Bart's already done with us. He's like, I don't care. I'm
He's
done
like,
with you guys.
No, we're hiding. We did last night. We got carry out from the Boulevard. It was quite busy in there.
No one was wearing masks.
Well, everyone was seated.
Ouch.
And
well,
I can't.
All the people walking out weren't masks. I was sitting in the parking lot and then, like, they're all walking out
yeah.
and wearing masks.
It was busy, nice, all very full. And I ran in and out of there, lickety split. And then PetSmart. Ooh, everyone had a mask on in PetSmart.
I do feel like the mask thing this time around, like with the Omicron, I feel like we've all just kind of gone, okay, everyone's getting it. And it's like there's a certain.
No, I agree with you. We upgraded to an N95s. I bought a 95.
Yeah, I wear a 95 everywhere now.
I need to get some of those.
I was looking for them.
Our problem is I see my dad all the time, and he's 79, and he's
got every comorbidity that'll kill you with COVID. So
yes, he is vaccinated, but it's very likely that if he got it, it might be the end of him.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
What is your thoughts on N95s versus KN95s?
I think they're pretty similar. I know the KN95s still have the same technology. Like they have, it's
five layers or something.
And an electrical, whatever there's.
Electrostatic.
Yeah, there's electrostatic, just like the N95s. They're just not manufactured.
They're in China. I said there was
in
China.
They're not NIOSH. They're not NIOSH certified, so that's it. But. If you don't get a fake one, I think a KN95 is good.
That's it. Like, where do you not? I mean, it's kind of, I have to find them for my daughter's school, and I'm doing a bunch of research and trying to find them in Amazon.
I Amazoned, and I had got 3M 95s.
They're not available till, like, she's already goes back. And it's like, it's kind of hard to find them, and then you find out that there's fake KN95s, and how do you know it's fake? And it's just very overwhelming right now to try to find anything.
Yeah. I know there are manufacturers in the U.S. They're probably twice the cost, but I guess that would be worth it. If you put them in a paper bag for 2 days after you wear them, that kind of like does a decontamination process. That's what the hospital workers were doing 2 years ago because they didn't have any. So they were being reused. So they would go in a paper bag for like 3 days and everything would die and you'd wear it again.
Hmm. Well, Mike and I went to Pav's last night to get some alcohol milkshakes.
Delicious.
Oh, shit.
It was so busy, though. It was really
double
busy.
Irish. Double Irish is the way to go.
I'm just not like an alcohol in ice cream kind of guy. I saw Steve and Jen's kid in there one day getting a couple of them. And like walking all the way back with like two giant cups.
Yeah.
And they're also like what, like $7 or $8 a piece? Like,
oh, they are.
Nice. 10, 11.
He'll usually drink one on the way home and then he'll freeze the other one and then drink it later.
Yeah, they're good. They are good.
I appreciate that people like them. And I think it's cool that we have a place like that in the Falls that serves them. I'm not into them, but they were good.
Dude, they have a banana split there that I want, an alcoholic banana split. Oh, the bananas are soaked in Maker's Mark.
Oh, wow.
They flambé it? They should flambé it. I guess then you wouldn't have the alcohol there.
But they said it's just they're soaked with the Maker's Mark. I'm like, mm.
But we have to eat it there, and we weren't going to eat there. But they also have like vegan ice cream, and I mean, it was like we were looking at all their offerings, and they have so much good stuff, even for people that do not like the adult milkshakes. But I got the mudslide, which was so good, but I can only finish half of it because it was so sweet.
Yeah, and so heavy, and you're full. Yeah. All those milk fats. Yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of the alcoholic ice cream. I think it ruins them. If I'm going to eat sugar and fat, I want it to taste like sugar and fat. I don't want it to taste like alcohol. Well, I want an alcohol drink after I ate my ice cream or before, but not combined.
All together.
You can take a drink and then put your ice cream in there and swish it up yourself.
No.
It's like dipping your Wendy's fries in the frosty.
Well, fries are frosty. Fries
I'm also not entirely sure I would want to like be drunk with like a belly full of milk.
Yeah. Well, you're not going to get drunk from it. If you get drunk from that, oh my gosh. I am, weak sauce when it comes to alcohol, and I didn't feel any tipsy, even a little bit. So it's just a little bit.
It's delicious. Do it.
Okay.
Do it.
My daughter's going to Falls Music School still. Falls Music School is a great local business. Ooh. Lainey, she's taking piano lessons. She's been doing this for I guess a month and a half now, but my daughter's, unfortunately, over the holiday, they had COVID, so... It was a weird holiday season for us, and she missed a couple lessons, and so we had to kind of figure out, like, well, what does she still owe, and what lessons does she still have available? Because I had a gift card for the first month.
Did she forget anything, or did she kind of fall back, or she was still...
Well, she has the book. I mean, for little kids, she's 6. They'll actually be 7 next week.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yes, that's the thing about kids is that they grow. It's
yeah,
crazy.
They stop. Yeah,
yeah, they don't stop.
Even if you ask them to, they won't.
Well, eventually, when they're not kids anymore, they stop. But
still be kids.
But yeah, so they have like a little kids book, Piano Adventures, by Faber and Hal Leonard. And
ooh,
so
Hal Leonard does everything.
They have that one in their door somewhere.
Aww.
Yeah. So she likes it, and like the teacher always, comes out and says she's super smart and that she's, crushing it, and she always tells me about all the stickers she got for doing it. So we're just kind of letting her see how it goes. She's also playing soccer with the Falls Soccer Club, so I guess that's football. I guess technically another business we're supporting. They just had the last game of the first winter session yesterday. She loves soccer. She's not great at it, which is okay, and I know she'll get better. But like she seems to be kind of afraid of the ball and stuff. So it's kind of fun to watch. There are some of those kids are amazing. Like, but some of them are just, they're kind of standing around. The coach has to be like, go get the ball. And they all run. Oh shit. And they all run.
It's the age.
It's like Charlie Brown. They're all chasing the pass, chasing the ball. And it's just skill building.
But she loves it. So, I mean, that's all that matters. I also, as I posted online, and I think I talked about last time with Bart too, I got a couple of paintings from, Poorhouse 27, which is, I think the guy's name is Eric Bamer. He does this amazing acrylic pour art that I love. And, I approached him about, doing a couple of really large pieces. So I got two, 24 by 36 pieces that they're not quite continuous, but if you stand here and look at them long enough, you can kind of convince yourself that they are. I put them in some really cool floating canvas frames on my wall, and I love them. I didn't love them when I first got them, and I don't even know why, but once I got them in the frames and put them on the wall, I just really, really, really love them. And I've been on a mission to get art on my walls. I'm going to be looking for a Stephen Mulay piece here pretty soon, I think. So
that would be awesome.
Yeah.
I got
quite a plethora to choose from.
Yeah. And I know that. So that's kind of what I'm excited about. I also, as you may know, I'm officially no longer a member of the Cuyahoga Falls Board of Education. And when the new members, and I think we're going to talk about this later, were sworn in on Wednesday, I joined former President Karen Schofield to present some little boutonnieres to the new members. And then we went to Ohio Brewing afterwards and had a pizza and a couple of beers and hung out with Chris Verich a little bit, sampled a new brew that he's got coming out, some kind of pineapple thing, and a couple of guest brews in there. Yeah. It was crowded. I mean, it wasn't like super busy, but he said that they've been weathering the storm of COVID-19 fairly well, you know, considering I hadn't been there in a couple months maybe. So it was kind of cool to sit at the bar and get a bite. You know, people were putting their masks on when they got up from their tables, but I do feel like in bars, it's less likely that people are going to remember to like mask up when they move away from their table. But I pretty much was, you know, a bump on a log at that bar for the hour and a half, 2 hours I was there. I had that coffee porter. There was a coffee porter from Jackie O's that was very good, and an IPA from someplace in like Montana that was also very good. So it was a nice time. And Karen and I got to be really good friends. Karen's not on social media, so if you know Karen's name, it's because you probably paid attention to school board or saw her name on the ballot over the last 10 years because she was the president of that board. Well, she was on the board. I don't know if she was president the whole time, but she was on the board for like 9+ years, almost 10 years. And just an amazing community servant. She serves as a guardian ad litem in the county court system. She's on the board of directors or the board of something for the Riverfront YMCA. I mean, the woman just inserts herself into stuff as a community servant and volunteer in ways that's extremely impressive. So hats off to Karen Schofield, and that's all I got.
What about you, Bart?
I spent the first half of the week being sick.
Yeah.
I still feel like I've got a bit of it. But I ordered from Clean Eats on Tuesday.
Oh.
I had never gone there before.
You never been? Good stuff.
What'd you get?
What I got, how I knew that I had my taste back. Because it was super, super spicy.
Oh.
Some of their stuff is, yeah.
Yeah. I did one of like their buildable things with chicken, rice, fire roasted salsa, broccoli, roasted corn and black beans and mushrooms.
Oh, that's awesome.
And
good.
It was a lot spicier than I had planned on it being.
Did you get the swollen spicy spice mix?
I did not. I just did like the clean herbs.
Yeah, do clean herbs. These like swollen spicy.
They can't make it spicy enough for me. It's like, even when they make it spicy again, it's a weak sauce, so.
Yeah,
that's why you like that Indian.
Some of their meats are spicy. I think.
Yeah,
they are. A lot of times when you're making it healthier, they put a lot more spice in it just to give it some flavor.
Yep.
But you know, I'm too white to do spice. I guess. A little too.
I mean, we've kind of gravitated to the.
Really.
Yeah.
Our normal level of spice is everyone else's. Oh my god, that's too hot. And we're weak sauce. That's where we graduated to. Yeah, we have. Sorry.
I can't. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I got that Scottish-Irish tongue or something. I can't handle it.
Bland.
Yeah.
Garlic is too much.
I can't be bland anymore.
We should have Indian dinner. We should do an Indian dinner.
No, I'd have to make two meals, one for them and one for us.
Like one with just a teeny bit of spice, and I'll be like, this is spicy. Masala.
I could do like baby spice, like something like chocolate.
Baby spice.
Like everyone else.
That would be too spicy for me. That'd be too spicy for me.
So tell me what you want, what you really, really want.
Oh,
I made it with baby.
I'm just trying to figure out how Mike didn't make a joke about spicy meat a little while ago.
I'm just letting it go. I'm being good.
It's marinating.
Yes.
See what you did there.
As always, we would love to see submissions of your own work. If you'd like to collaborate with us or just want to see us interview someone specific, drop us a line at fallsfreepress@gmail.com or via our Facebook page. And the same if you'd like to tell us what you think of the show.
Please don't. We don't. No. I don't.
Join
the
Alex Hate. The Alex Hate Club.
The Alex Hate Club, it popped up in a strange place today. I just want to say, like, that was pretty funny. Mike and Suzanne did their 10-year challenge thing on Facebook, and Tom Sullivan was like, did he still hate Alex back then?
Yeah.
Suzanne's like, strangely more.
That was funny.
That was hilarious.
He didn't even He didn't even know you back then, but he just felt it. It was
I just sensed it.
Yeah.
Say what you want about Alex Hall. He's got a good sense of humor. God damn it.
Does he?
Take a fucking joke.
To put on a vest. Hell yeah.
Does he?
And finally, get vaccinated, wear a mask, everything that we've been talking about all this entire show so far. How long has it been?
2 years.
Something going on. There's a lot of people that are getting, I mean, luckily, you look at the figures of, like, how many people are vaccinated, like, the percentages and stuff, it's going up. I mean, I think people, this time around, I don't know how you guys feel. I at least have some hope in that I feel like the communicability of this particular variant seems to have, like, finally snapped at least some people out of it. Not everybody, obviously, still a lot of idiots out there, but I just feel like a lot of people are finally.
Most people I work with still just think it's a cold and, you know, just. It's stupid that we have to quarantine. It's stupid. Well, if the CDC says we go from 10 days to 5 days, you know, and it just means it's not that serious. Blah, 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 blah. And it's just, yeah.
But I do feel like people are wearing masks, like, more now. Certainly still a lot of people not wearing masks. But, like, when I go out, I do see a lot more mask wearing happening. And, you know, I mean, there's no mandate now, and people are doing it of their own accord. I think that says something. Because you remember, like, before it was like, there's a mandate. You go out, you see a guy not wearing a mask, and it was like, oh, you're intentionally being an asshole. You know, people are wearing masks now because they know it's dangerous and spreading.
You're treading on my liberties, man.
That you will go there and nobody's wearing a mask. So.
That's true. It's my own bubble. My own bubble.
Yeah. The counties where you can find the booster and the at-home test still.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Sadly, I do.
Not picking up what you're putting down.
Some sort of accent you were using just then. Maybe that sort of
got to go to the library.
Subtle inference there.
Mm-hmm. I figured I was being very vague. No one will know what I mean. No hate letters.
Well, and then kids, I mean, my kids got the vaccine, then they got COVID, then they got their second shot, their second vaccine shot.
Yay!
I mean, it's just crazy, you know.
Did they get any kind of, like, reaction from the second shot after they had COVID? So it was just, okay.
Sore arms.
Do they know if they had Omicron or?
No, we have no idea.
They don't say.
It was somebody that they are in contact with pretty regularly, didn't get vaccinated, was, you know, in that camp, and spend time around this person pretty frequently, and when they found out that they had symptoms and then tested and had it, it was like the next day my kids started exhibiting symptoms. It was the last day of school before holiday break, and they couldn't go to school. They were so upset. Aww. And then they, you know, the next day in the afternoon, they both had fevers, and then their mom had a fever. They were supposed to come back with me that day just for one night and then go back with their mom because the way we had holidays kind of worked out. And it just, you know, I was like, well, there's no sense. We might as well close the loop. So they stayed with their mom that night. And then the next day they started exhibiting symptoms. Then she started exhibiting symptoms. And then they finally tested a day or two later. And they had it. And they had to. And so it's completely dashed our holiday plans. And, I mean, this happened to everybody, right, this year. And last year, too. But it didn't happen for me last year. I mean, we didn't go anywhere or do anything. Like, we kind of planned not to. This year we were thinking we could get away with it because we were all healthy and everything was going all right. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just curious if they knew which variant they had, you know.
I wasn't even the one that tested them, I guess was why I told that story. So I don't know. But as far as, you know, it's just positive. That's what they know.
You know, there's this new variant that has, I don't know if it's a variant, but you can get the flu and COVID at the same time.
It's just a co-infection. It's not a
variant.
It's not a hybrid. It's not a variant. It's just getting both at the same time because flu's starting to pick up.
Is it the respiratory type flu or is it the stomach type flu? Because I think that would be the suckiest of all.
I don't know. I haven't heard about anything about the stomach type flu. I think it's probably respiratory.
All right.
I would imagine it's probably not good if you get flu and COVID at the same time. They're probably going to be fucking miserable.
I don't know, man. Yeah. Maybe the one will outcompete the other in your body.
I don't know. Super fun.
Yeah. Everyone I texted and said Merry Christmas to, some of my colleagues are like, oh, we're home with COVID. The entire family has it. And then one was like, I'm home alone. My family that I was going to visit has COVID and my son is with his dad and, you know, they don't have COVID. So now she's just home alone. Yeah. That was the whole.
And we lucked out. My brother and his family came in from Maryland. They're all vaccinated and boosted. And they're mask wearers too, but you know they obviously.
I was scared, but no one got COVID, so we were able to be together. We all tested before we got together.
Kind of just feels like more and more people, you know, because this is spreading so more rapidly. Yeah.
It's going to get
like a domino effect. And it's just, we're just bracing for us to get it.
We're just trying to slow down the infection rate so the hospitals don't collapse. But yeah, the clinic has National Guard. I see them all over now.
Isn't Ohio like one of the most?
Cuyahoga County
is number one on infections. I don't know if that still is. Last week it was.
Yeah.
In the country or in the state?
In the country.
Jesus.
Number one. Yeah. So it's getting us.
And we're number one.
Summit County isn't far behind. And then like Franklin down south is not far behind that. So I think Ohio is going to hit herd immunity in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Oh, well, is that good?
I think so, but who knows what the next variant is going to do. I don't know. It seems like Omicron it covers a lot of bases. It said if you had an Omicron infection, you'd be protected against Delta, which is good. So
is it possible that we haven't, we don't even know? I mean, that's the whole point of needing to stay away from, because we're all vaccinated and boosted. Yeah. So we could be carrier of it and not necessarily
know.
Yeah. So that is why we still have to mask.
That's
I don't know, dude. I don't want to get you sick.
I don't want to get you sick, man. You know, I don't know if I'm carrying, so.
Yeah. I'm a carrier. Bye.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it is, you know, it's scary out there.
It's going to be a very rough 3 weeks, but I think we'll be over the hoop.
Into our roundtable. Goodbye, Chapel Hill Mall.
Goodbye, Chapel Hill Mall.
Yes.
The inside of the mall is steadily being demolished, creating a large open space where the stores used to be. The only parts of the mall which will not be affected are the former Macy's space, which has been converted into a storage space and wasn't part of the land purchase, and the food court carousel, which is being donated to the city of Akron.
Yeah, so they're going to like lock 3 or something like that.
I think
Yeah.
The pictures in the article were really cool. It's very interesting how they're reshaping it. I hope they get a lot of new light industrial businesses in there.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone's seen the pictures in this podcast, but. They're basically taking out all the walls from all the businesses and making one giant open space. And then they're going to partition it off depending on who wants to rent or lease a certain
spot
for light industrial or whatever commercial businesses.
Yeah, it's good for them.
Yep.
Got that Craft 33, and it's like a big like cabinetry, like home products, I guess, for industrial purposes. If you're building a house or if you're a developer, like you go there and get a whole bunch of your fixtures and stuff. And I think they're actually manufactured there, so.
Were they the ones that were using the old JCPenney?
Sears. I think Sears, yeah.
Sears, okay, yeah.
Yeah, they're in a nice big space to be able to
get those three anchor stores, so.
And apparently they plan to have the entire building completely occupied by 2023. They're thinking of at least up to 10 businesses.
Wow, I hope so.
If they get it.
That's great, yeah.
We almost made it through this whole thing without making a joke about ICP. But I
was waiting
sure.
for Bart to say ICP, and then we could all go, ICP.
3-liter Faygo.
I can't remember what the acronym actually stands for in this like company that is redeveloping the property. And actually, they redevelop like malls and big properties like this all over the place. And good for them, because these are places like the community I come from in Cincinnati had a huge mall called Forest Fair Mall with like an indoor arcade, and there was a freaking Ferris wheel inside this place. Completely gone. Just a ghost town now. And it's terrible. So
it's
for
like
Chapel
Rolling
Hill.
Acres, right? Rolling Acres did the same thing where they just became a ghost town.
Is that the one that became like an Amazon thing?
It's Amazon distribution hub now. Yeah. Industrial Commercial Properties, LLC.
They did that Amazon facility, didn't they? They're the one that
it's massive. Massive.
Chapel Hill is, 800,000 square feet? You know how big the Randall used to be?
Not a clue. No. Let me see if I can... do a little digging real quick.
I personally am glad to see that they're going to be bringing in multiple businesses in there instead of just an Amazon warehouse. I don't know. That's just me, but.
And the article did suggest that they were like on the verge of announcing another big tenant.
Yeah, they did say they were.
Oh, no. It's probably going to be Amazon.
Well, I don't think that would be funny
this
context. But, but no, I mean, I think between the storage place and the Craft 33, I mean, my only concern is that, like, yeah, it's cool. You've got the storage space, which is not even part of the whole thing. You've got Craft 33, which was there before they even, I mean, they wanted to be able to maintain that particular business. It was already there. They're going to announce one more place, but are they going to get, you know, seven or whatever additional business? Like, I hope they do, but I just, yeah. I mean, there's
well,
so many
know,
malls in the country.
Well, you know, it is slow that, right now because of the pandemic. So,
sure,
you know, maybe whatever fundings have been passed or if we get any of the Build Back Better stuff coming along and helping make grants available, maybe it'll support small businesses.
And they're still prepping out all they're still doing demo work. They're still not even
ready
for
tenants.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do we know if the Craft 33, is that just for businesses or is that going to be open to the public? Does anybody know about their business model?
I went to their website. It didn't, I mean, it seems like you could probably order from their website, but it didn't have, like, I don't even think, you know, a lot of businesses now, like, they won't even put, like, their mailing address on the website. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it was on there. So, and they might even have, like, other, you know, locations where they do administrative stuff or other manufacturing. Who knows? But it didn't look like that to me. Like, you and I could probably order from there online, but I don't know that we could walk in over.
Was it a custom cabinetry, like for kitchens and bathrooms and that kind of stuff, or is it something different?
I don't know if it was custom or if it was just like prefab, you know?
Yeah, because there's a place out in near Lordstown that called Craftmade. Sure. They're a national company that makes cabinetry.
Yeah.
And I know that you can, as a public, can go directly and order stuff from them. And they also have a scratch and dent warehouse where you can go in and every weekend you can buy stuff like pennies on the dollar. Buy like cabinet sets, yeah.
Yeah, my old house, we put a pantry in from there.
We always are looking for that bargain. Like, we'll go to Restore, or we'll go to Building 9 and places like that looking for some kind of way to.
Many years ago, we went to their scratch and dent place. I went there probably four or five times with my mom. And most of the additional cabinets that we bought, I bought there. And we bought a bunch of stuff. You go in, but the thing is, you have to get there crack of dawn. They open at like 7 a.m. and there's a giant line waiting to get in outside. So it's really competitive because if you're rehabbing a house, you want to get stuff cheap. You can go in there, buy a whole kitchen worth of stuff. Like, you know,
30%.
Yeah. 30% of what normally you would pay. Mm-hmm. And so you would just go, they would have them all wrapped up and you just say, give me that one or give me this piece or give me that piece. Mm-hmm. And they would load it in your truck and then off you go.
Hmm. I don't like that kind of pressure, though.
First come, first serve. Yep.
Yeah, it is. That's part of the fun, though, the hunt. The hunt for you, whatever you're looking for.
Anywho, moving on.
So, yeah, well, next year we'll see what they've got.
Yeah, it should be exciting.
And on a side note, the Amazon is only 640,000 is what it says at Rolling Acres. So
only 640,000.
Yeah, big, but it's not that big.
During their last meeting of 2021, City Council voted to join the Regional Dispatch Center. A majority of council and those in discussion were in favor of the center, acknowledging that this is the time to do this or else risk current dispatch employees losing their jobs later on. This will also allow Cuyahoga Falls safety forces to stay on top of changes and provide better access to equipment and efficiency. The city will pay $1.1 million to the council government, made up of Summit County, Talmadge, and Fairlawn, who will help maintain the new location. As of now, Stowe has not yet joined the dispatch center. They had a meeting about it on January 6th, and they plan to vote on January 27th. But so far, they're the only ones that haven't joined up. There was a small amount of dissent coming from a letter from police union leaders who were not present at the meeting that they sent to council. All of the issues mentioned in the letter, however, Police Chief Davis has noted that nothing in the letter has been mentioned in previous meetings since the discussion began 5 years ago.
Okay, wait, so you're saying that the things that they were bringing up, they haven't brought up before?
Yeah.
This is all new stuff?
Oh. Nothing. The dispatch center talk began like 5 years ago. And Chief Davis basically said, we literally just had a union negotiation, you know, for a contract recently. None of this was ever mentioned then. It's never mentioned before.
Really?
From the sounds of it, basically this letter was sent out because another union said they should do that.
Well, I think that's like, kind of unfair.
Not very meaningful.
Well, and does the union cover the dispatch employees? Probably not. So, I mean,
I don't know what union they're under.
I mean, the point being, like, you know, it wouldn't have come up in their negotiations if those employees are not covered by that union. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The negotiation like wouldn't have mattered unless the police were really, really concerned about that, which I suppose is what he's saying. Like, they must not have been concerned about it because it didn't come up. Or if we're talking about union leaders who are like separated from the police force itself, like they're state police union leaders and not actually like members of the local chapter, who are, you know, saying these things. I don't know. I saw that letter and I just was like, it just struck me as odd.
So just stirring up dissent just to be negative, just to have something to say or make waves.
Well, unions are always going to want to keep administrations on their toes just because they want anything and everything they can to, like, you know, support their efforts in negotiations. But a lot of times...
Too late to bring it up now, though, after they were planning on voting?
I mean, yeah.
Hey, we're going to vote. Let's bring it up now. I mean, where were they 5 years ago?
Yeah. I mean...
I don't know. It just seems a little...
I mean, and again, like, a lot of unions, too, will be like, there's, like, a local chapter, and then there's, like, a state, you know, leader, and then there could even be, like, a national leader. And if this was just, like, some state leader who... you know, was philosophically or ideologically opposed to this idea of like a centralized dispatch center, you know, then they just maybe were sending this letter for posterity, you know.
Just to have it on the books. Look, yeah. We spoke up. Interesting. Speaking of Stowe, I did read that Judge Hoover is getting, is going to be, his case is coming before the judges and is going to be reviewed in April, where he has been accused of illegally punishing people without counsel and pressuring, squeezing money out of people, complainants that didn't have funding to pay for their infractions or their tickets. So I'm glad that they took up his case and they're going to be giving him the old cross-examination.
That will be interesting to see what the outcome is. So
yeah, he says he didn't do anything wrong. We'll see what the law says.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, Bart and I discussed that last week, and I think the big thing there is that, like, you know, if he's disbarred as a lawyer, he's removed from the bench as a judge. So, and I think, what did we say, Bart? We found out it was in the article that week that the panel was going to be like a retired judge from Lima, like a former police chief, and then like a Fifth Circuit district judge or something.
Yeah, so that should be interesting to see where that goes too.
Oh, Stowe. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Cuyahoga Falls City School District is asking for a renewal of its 2017 levy on the May 3rd ballot. This is a 4.75 mil levy, smallest that the district even has on books.
The renewal?
Well, yeah, that's a renewal.
Okay.
Those usually pass without any trouble.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ways in which school districts get screwed over, though, by, like, the tax, like, the property taxation. And I mean, one of them in particular is that, like, if inflation causes, like, you know, prices to go up or whatever, they never, like, collect mills based on, you know, what the current rates are. They can only collect mills based on what the rates were when the levy was passed. So there's, like, the effective millage, and then there's, like, the actual, or there's the effective millage, and then there's, like, the millage that was passed. So the effective millage of this 4.75 mil levy might actually collect less money with inflation rates or whatever. So it's really, this is why, like, these things have to be renewed, because if they aren't, it affects the budget in a huge way.
Really wish Ohio would fix the way the schools are funded, which is illegal for 25 years.
They're trying to, but what the progress that they're making on that, even if it passes, to me, it seems like it's not going to improve funding that much, but it's going to change the
The process, but it doesn't fix the problem. Oh,
yeah. I mean,
this is the epitome of government.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, it like places like Hudson and Solon,
that's why it's illegal, because, you know, they're rich and they have money.
They do well. They don't want it to change. And places like Akron and, you know, and Falls and Cleveland systems, and they need it to change. And it's the haves and the have nots all over again. Yeah. The have nots just have more money and they have more power. It always has. It's always
the haves.
Like that. The haves. Yeah.
And finally, a lot of stuff happened this week with new people in office. We got new school board members, and we've got new council members.
Right. Yeah,
and Anthony is the president now, right?
Anthony's the
president. Is that new?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's never been the president before. He was vice president. So he's the president with Patrice White is the vice. And then you have Carrie Schaefer and Alicia Coco and AJ Harris as the new board members. And they all have like committee responsibilities and things too. The school board is a lot of work. It's a lot of work. So, you know, hats off to those folks who are willing to, you know, spend their time doing that work because it's a lot. Yeah, and yeah, Brian Ashton, the 10th Democrat on the 11 person Cuyahoga Falls City Council. Crazy. Just, I mean, absolutely insane. When I moved here, that was a 6-5 Republican, and now it's 10-1 Democrat.
Yeah.
It's just insane.
And I was reading in our notes from city council meeting, because of the way the law is written, every committee has to, it can't be all Democrats or all Republicans. And because Adam Miller is the only Republican on council, he's forced to be in every committee. And it's not his decision. He has no, he, you know, it's not his idea to be in every committee. He's forced to be in every
country. Oh, no.
So, I mean, what happens if he, for example, he loses his seat and it becomes all Democrats? Then what are they going to do?
That's a good question.
They'll have to change the charter
or
something.
They have to change the law.
Because according to the council rules, it can't be, you know, you have to have
bipartisan.
At least one from each party.
Wow.
That's funny.
I bet she loves all that extra work.
Poor him.
Got to do his reading.
This city wouldn't function without me.
I'm on every committee.
Oh, man. Yeah, we'll hear something
about
that. I
could see him making that into some kind of big post.
Oh, yeah.
And claiming that the city
falls
on him.
Oh, no.
So much better than
my God.
Else.
Come on now.
Vote for me. I'm the best.
29.
Do you guys think that 2 years is, the thing I was going to say about Adam Miller is like, hey, you know, you're getting paid $20,000 a year plus benefits if he opts for those benefits to be a city council person. I mean, you know. It's a real salary. It's not a big salary. It's a small salary, but it's $20,000 per year.
Yeah, it's a salary.
So, I mean, you know, those committee responsibilities are at least, you know, paid. I happen to know school board members get paid $125 per meeting.
Per meeting.
Before taxes. So, you know.
Yeah, it's pitiful.
And you can't make more than $5,500 per year. That's like Ohio law. So they have to be careful how many emergency meetings and other little things they call too, because you know they can't pay their members very much. So he's getting paid quadruple what a school district board member could potentially make. So and benefits. Now school board members do have the option of benefits, but I think they mostly decline them. But so he is, you know, getting paid. But I was going to ask you guys. You know, one of the things in the charter is that the city council members have 2 year terms unless you're at large. Do you think it's fair for the, and as I'm not, I don't have a dog in fight. I'm just curious. Do you guys think it's fair or right for the terms of city council members to be only 2 years?
I haven't thought about it.
I think they should be four.
What's why? Why would they be lesser? Are the responsibilities different?
Well, I think the ward council members actually maybe have more responsibilities just because they have to like deal with perhaps like, you know, neighborhood disputes and things like that, where at large probably doesn't do as much of that because they represent the whole city. So they're not going to get involved in like, you know, the lady on the street with too many bird feeders or whatever. Whereas the ward council person probably, you know, could potentially end up having to get in that argument. I don't have an answer necessarily. I was just curious what you guys think of that.
My about it, I don't hate. It's just, it's frustrating because as soon as they get sworn in and as soon as they start their term, they're almost running for their next term.
Yeah.
You know, because, yeah. You know, you have like maybe 6 months where you can lay off and then you're running again. So it's like, besides selling those disputes and everything else that goes along with it, I mean, it's like you have to make time to also campaign and get out there and do everything else. So it's like, how are you doing? And most of these people have other jobs, you know, so it's like they're not specifically doing just city council. That's a huge time commitment, but
yeah.
I don't think two is enough.
And they do meet more. I mean, I used board members as like the touchstone there, like board members meet twice. I mean, theoretically, probably end up meeting them a lot more, but they meet twice per month and council members meet once a week. And I think they do have a lot of committee responsibilities and stuff too, but yeah, I don't know. Just curious what you guys thought about that. I mean, because charter, there is a committee for charter review. They can make changes. You know, I don't know. It'd probably be a tough sell, you know. Like, I struggle to see how, like, in today's political climate, you could get to the point that they did in 1985 where they were actually willing to annex a whole, like, village, you know, Northfield Township, or Northampton, sorry, Township, Northampton. Like, became part of the city. Like, is there any community in the world right now that would be willing to, like, become part of, you know, another city and, like, relinquish their identity in certain ways? And I just don't see it. You know, I just don't. But that's the kind of stuff that I suppose could potentially come before, you know, these little committees first. Anyway, sorry.
Suzanne, do you have any good news?
I do have some good news. So last year, the Cuyahoga Falls National Honor Society made over 900 hand-knitted hats for babies that were at Children's Hospital. And they also made over 200 no-sew blankets for cancer patients at Akron General. This year, they're hoping to do even more. So they're asking the community for donations. You can purchase them through Amazon. They do have a register, or you can drop them off at the main office. So, yeah, get some. There's a register on Amazon, registry on Amazon. So if you're interested in what they're looking for or what they need. So, yeah.
Can you list that out? Where to find that? Is there a www?
www.amazon.com, registries, custom, and then there's like this 3G, 5, so I don't know if you can do that. Maybe we can put it on our notes.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll put that on our notes for the podcast so people can maybe just click on it and go to the registry and
awesome.
Send them some stuff. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Very nice. Is it time? Sparts. Oh, yeah. That was the best one. That was good.
Oh, so fast. I feel like we need to slow it down.
Sparts.
Well, okay. Maybe double time.
Sparts.
Kind of like Born Free.
It becomes like Hal when you take the chips out.
We play it backwards. You can hear a message too from Satan.
Or is it says
Mike hates Alex.
Still hate Alex. Yep.
That was good, Mike. Oh man, I'm impressed by you.
Hey Bart, tell us of the art.
So Blossom is already scheduling concerts for the spring and summer of this year. Still keeping with plans to require health checks at the door. They have said that anything could change. You know, these are all not set in stone. Things could happen with the artists. Things could happen with the virus that prevents them from being open.
We're all dead.
Yeah.
Things like that.
But many of the artists scheduled had shows canceled during the past couple of years due to COVID. So they're bringing people back.
I got the list up if you're curious.
I mean, the Backstreet Boys are coming.
Yeah, Tim McGraw.
Backstreet Boys.
The Backstreet Boys.
Tim McGraw, Tears for Fears. Styx with Aria Speedwagon. Miranda Lambert with Little Big Town. Jack Johnson. Nick Cannon's Wildin' Out, which is kind of funny.
Seriously.
Backstreet Boys, Doobie Brothers, Keith Urban, Rod Stewart.
No.
Rod Stewart.
And Matchbox 20. Rod Stewart might punch a guy, though.
Rod Stewart, we're going to Rod Stewart, but that's like the second, that'll be like the third date they had for him.
Yeah, it does say
it was postponed, it was postponed again.
Rod Stewart, Doobie Brothers, and Backstreet Boys are all listed as having been like rescheduled. So,
I mean, they're all of that age where it could be dangerous.
It could be dangerous. I would definitely not come if it was so bad. Rod Stewart's like 75.
I think he might even be older than that.
I don't know.
Doobie Brothers are about the same age too.
Vulnerable.
Tears for Fears would be a cool show. They're coming here with Garbage too, which I didn't know was still a thing.
But yeah, I don't know. How old is Shirley Manson now? She's got to be 50.
Well, you don't care about the other guys in the band?
No, I don't. Just Shirley Manson.
She's forever young, just like Rod Stewart. See what I did there?
Because I'm only happy when it rains.
Yeah, me too.
So next, Cuyahoga Valley Art Center is currently hiring. They're looking for a K-12 fine arts teacher, a visual arts instructor, and an administrative associate.
Well, that is good news that they're hiring. That means that they're doing well.
Yeah.
I was going to say, they went from about to close to hiring three positions.
That's awesome.
That's good.
So if you're interested in those positions, they're posted on the Cuyahoga Valley Art Center's website. Go check them out. And finally, just outside of the falls, Millennial Theater Project is presenting Rent at the Akron Civic Theater.
Oh, that'd be fun.
I've never seen Rent.
We got to see it at Cleveland. We were able to get some free tickets, actually, to go see it. Oh, it was really good. Yeah. This was definitely pre-COVID and stuff, but it was pretty awesome. I really liked it.
So this is happening the next 3 weekends. It's $20 a ticket.
Not bad.
I like theater. I don't go to the theater as often as what I would like to.
The theater.
I do like it. I like the musicals and theater. I don't know. Mike never takes me anywhere. Keeps me locked in the house.
Get back in your hole. Get back in the room.
So we want to thank our listeners for joining us this week. And
we still have listeners?
Yeah, I don't know.
Two of them. Are they still in Colorado?
Shout out to Chris Donahue, who is an avid listener and sends us suggestions and comments on our stuff. Yeah, we do. We really do. Yep.
We apologize, really Chris Donahue. I apologize for my actions.
Well, I mean, they must like it. They keep, listening, so that's good.
And we want to thank whoever is about to speak for speaking with us.
whoever shall be guest.
They who shall not be named.
The mystery interview.
Obviously, if you look at the show notes, by the time this show comes out, you will know who it is because it'll say it in the show notes and it'll say it when it's posted on Facebook.
Maybe you should say mystery guest.
Mystery guest to see if it drives up your show.
Maybe, yeah.
Listenership.
Listen to find out who's on this show this week.
Ooh, yeah. Force them to listen to us.
Interview roulette.
And remember, we do want to hear your ideas for potential interviewees, potential articles, how we're doing on the show. Shout them out to us at falls3press@gmail.com and review us on your favorite podcatcher so that other people can hear our insane shenanigans.
Yeah.
Tell us how much you hate him.
Yeah, do that. I was going to say that Bart had reached out to Vincent, so we hope to get them on the show. There's a little preview of coming up stuff. Vincent's, of course, one of the most interacted with posts on our Facebook page ever. We don't know how long they're going to be there, so we're hoping that they can come on the show and tell us about the history of that old, old bakery. And maybe we can find somebody in the community who wants to go be an apprentice and keep the doors open on the place.
Somebody go buy cookies and cakes and all the yummy stuff from there all the time.
Yeah, I love that place. Also, Bart Scott, I think next week we're hoping that we're going to have Cuyahoga Falls Digging History, the cats that use the metal detectors to find stuff in the ground all over the city. And there's a lot of cool stuff that they found at the Cuyahoga Falls Historical Society. And Bart, is there anything else we were looking at coming up?
I can think of those two.
Yeah. Well, then we need more suggestions as per your request. So
for now, we'll just say goodbye and hope you join us next time.
Bye. Stay safe out there.
Later.
Bye.
Later.
Later. All right, we're back on the Fallscast, and we are here with Eric Bramer, the owner and operator of a local business called Poor House 27, a very cool art studio doing poor art using acrylic paints on canvas and other materials. You might have seen his work in Looking Glass Gallery in Cuyahoga Falls and other places, including my wall. I'm lucky enough to have completed a commission. So we want to welcome to the show Eric Bramer of Poor House 27. Thanks for coming on, man.
Hello. Yeah, thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure. My pleasure, in fact, in particular because of these amazing pieces on my wall, which thank you again for them. We'll have to post some pictures of them. This is a really cool technique that a lot of people are into. If you go on Instagram and you type in poor art, it's just you'll go in down a rabbit hole for sure. So I want to talk about the technique, and I want to talk about all of that kind of stuff, how you got started and everything. But can you tell us a little bit about yourself before we do that? Where are you from? How'd you end up in the Falls? Are you from the Falls? That sort of thing.
Yeah, of course. So I'm actually from Boardman, Ohio, so about an hour or so away. I'm a recent graduate from Youngstown State University. I went there to get my teaching license, so I'm new out to the Falls, but I've had some connections out here for a while now. But I teach out at Talmadge, Talmadge School District, so that's kind of how I started out in the Falls and why I moved out here. I've been here for about 2 years now.
Are you teaching like elementary school or middle school? Or
yeah. I'm an intervention specialist at the elementary school out there.
Oh, wow, man. I'm not Christian, but that is God's work, I got to tell you. Good for you.
Well, thank you.
Okay, cool. So new-ish to the area and now making this amazing art. Can you talk a little bit? I mean, did you discover it on Instagram? I mean, how did you?
Yeah, so actually, I kind of got started at the beginning of the pandemic when we were all back in 2019 when we had that first lockdown. So during that time, I was teaching at Lakeview, and obviously we got moved to remote, so I was looking for something to kind of occupy my time a little bit and something that was a little bit therapeutic. So I started doing it then. I found a couple videos on YouTube. I actually wasn't on Instagram at the time. So I found a couple videos on YouTube, you know, how you go down that YouTube rabbit hole. And from there, on one of our trips to the store, we picked up a couple canvases and some paint, and I found that I really liked it. And I kind of taught myself how to do it. So it's been quite a journey. I'm pretty new to it. I started about 2 years ago. So it's been a lot of trial and error from there, and a lot of YouTube videos, like I said, trying to figure out what's what and how everything works.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about that therapeutic aspect of it? I think that's really important, especially right now, you know, to talk about how art can do that and how right now visual art is such a popular thing. I mean, you know, we've got this immersive Van Gogh thing, and, you know, also people have been shut in their houses for a while and looking at the walls and going, you know, I need something there. So can you talk about, you know, I would love to hear about how it's therapeutic for you, but also just what you love about this particular art form.
Right. Yeah. So for me, it's something that really lets me clear my head. I mean, when I'm painting on the canvas, that's really all that I'm thinking about. So just watching and seeing how the colors move and letting them kind of do their own thing is really important to me. I provide a little bit of input with how I manipulate the canvas or how I go in with palette knives and things like that. But watching them and really seeing that piece come together as I'm doing it, that's the therapeutic aspect for me. I really like abstract art because I think that it's something that everybody interprets completely differently. So it's really awesome to me to see how I would interpret a piece and how I would hang it on a wall and what I look for in a piece. And then talking with other people who either have purchased my art or other artists who have done similar styles to see what they see in a piece and what they take from it is really, really cool to me. So that's why I went with the abstract route, just because, like I said, everybody interprets it differently and everybody gets something unique out of each piece. You're never really going to look at the same piece as somebody else and think the same thing, if that makes sense.
Totally. When people look at these pieces, do they tend to like want to find order in the madness? Like, do they want to point out like, oh, I see a face or something like
yes,
that?
Okay. Yes. Yeah, 100%. A lot of people do that. Actually, the pieces that I did for you most recently, I was showing them to a few of my friends just to kind of think about orientation and the way that other people were perceiving them. And a couple of my friends actually pointed out a wizard in one of your pieces. So yes, they definitely try to find a face or some figure or something like that within the canvas.
Well, that's cool. I like wizards. No, I hadn't like really seen a wizard. When I was hanging them, a friend of mine was helping me hang them up, and I did, you know, sort of look at them and go like, well, people are going to come over and they're going to look at them. They're going to go like, oh man, I see a face. And then as I said that, I was like, I kind of do see a silhouette of a face right there, you know, like, so Poor Art, how long has it been around? Do you know?
Oh my goodness. I don't know. I feel like it's been around for quite some time, but within the past couple years, I think that it's exploded. Especially if you're on TikTok and Instagram, like you said, you can see it all over there. Someone on TikTok that actually kind of helped me get started and kind of influenced what I was doing is someone named Johnny Q. So he started about the same time as I did, I would think, maybe a little bit before me. And he completely exploded on the TikTok platform. He has a website. He sells hundreds of pieces every couple months. So like I said, I think it's been around for a while, but I think it's really taken off over the past couple years.
Yeah. It almost kind of reminds me of like spin art, too, in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely has like that connection to childhood a little bit.
Yeah, I can remember when I was a kid, like going to the fair and, you know, you pay the guy the money, you put your little square on the thing, and you go to town. One thing I remember thinking was really cool about spin art was if you would, like, convince the guy to let you, like, put the paints in, like, the middle just in little dots and then like turn it on so that you would get that like blurry sort of effect.
Right.
And I thought of that when I was thinking about this technique because there are a lot of variations to the technique. Like if you go on Instagram, there's like, you know, lots of different ways that people approach this. So there might be like, you know, one that is really kind of blurry and big blobs of color. There are others where the swirls are really, really small. There are some where they, you know, just like use like only a couple colors and try to keep them like separated and like really manipulate the canvas and use gravity to kind of move the paint around. What can you say about that or tell us about that? And how did you end up, you know, kind of doing it the way you did? Because I have seen in your Instagram a couple of pieces that were like a little different from your usual vibe.
Right. Yeah. So like you said, there's a bunch of different styles and obviously they all have names. I mean, I feel like the most popular ones are the dirty cup pour, a puddle pour, and just a flip cup. So those are just kind of how you start with the paint. So a dirty cup pour, you would put it all in the same cup, and then you would start that in the center of the canvas, kind of like you talked about with the spin art, and kind of let it go out from the center. And that really gives you that muddled look usually when you do it that way.
Okay.
For me, I try to do my paintings, especially the bigger ones, almost in layers. So I don't know if there's an actual term for it or not. But I'll typically start at one side of the canvas and I'll work my way all the way across. So I'll start with a base layer and put down a very fine base layer, whatever I want that most prominent color to be all the way across my canvas. And then from there, I'll kind of go and add a little pockets of color, tilt and turn the canvas, go in with a palette knife and move those colors around, and then add more throughout the canvas. And like I said, kind of let the paint do its own thing from there and move it around. There's so many different styles. I don't really know which one mine would fit more into. I've kind of developed almost my own style of doing it by merging all of these together, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to tell people where you live, but you live, you know, if we can say, in an apartment. I mean, I'm trying to figure out how you do this.
Right.
in a, I assume, relatively small apartment. I met you outside. And B, how you do it without, you know, getting the place super messy. You know, you're
right.
Gonna lose that security deposit, man.
Exactly. Yeah, so we have a, like you said, it's a little bit of a smaller apartment. We have a spare bedroom in the apartment, so I put down a massive tarp across the whole bedroom and I shut the door in there, and then that's kind of where I do a lot of it. I've done a couple larger pieces, a little bit larger than what I recently did for you, and for those I've had to go back home to my parents' house and do them out of the garage. So it just kind of depends on what I'm doing. But so far, that tarp on the ground has been pretty good. You just have to watch, obviously, paint splatter and things like that on the walls, depending on how you're turning the canvas. And we have a couple pets, too. So trying to keep them out of here while I'm doing that can be a little bit of a challenge. But
yeah, I can imagine cat prints. Although, hey, that might sell, too.
Right.
Well, that's cool. Now, talk about, like, because, I mean, you know, I think that a lot of people feel like they have like an artistic streak, right? And they probably do. Art is universal. You don't necessarily have to do art to I guess sort of feel it. But I think everybody, you know, I'm an artist, a musician. You know, that's my medium. But like, I think even people who don't think they are artists probably like make certain things arts. And may actually have more of an artistic streak than they think they do. It's one thing to, you know, use art for therapeutic purposes like you did during the pandemic year, which probably a lot of people did. It's something else to take it to the next step and start putting it in galleries. And I'm curious, like, you know, what led you to give it a shot? 'Cause, you know, it can be nerve-wracking, you know, to put yourself out there like that. But I mean, I discovered you because I saw a really small piece at Looking Glass, and I had been looking for art for my walls. I wanted something really large, you know, the rest is history, as they say. But
right,
how did you go about it? Did somebody push you to give it a shot? And how many galleries now are you in? Have you been in those kinds of things?
So to be honest with you, the biggest thing that started me in trying to go through the galleries and things like that, when I first started, I was painting quite a bit during the beginning of the pandemic, and I was actually running out of room to kind of house all of my paintings.
Yeah.
So I started giving them away to close family. So I would kind of meet them out on the porch masked up or at a 6 feet distance or even at the end of their driveway and just have them on the porch. And kind of seeing how the people would react to different things like that really had an impact on me. So from there, I started posting things on Instagram, not really with the intent ever to really sell any of my pieces, but just kind of to get them out there for other people to see, for other people that were bored and kind of going through the same thing that we all were during that time, just for something to look at and kind of take your mind off of what was happening. And then after that, I kind of grew a little bit in popularity. I'm by no means a big artist. I'm still a local artist. But from there, after kind of seeing it was possible, if that makes sense, with some of the success that I experienced on Instagram.
Sure.
I started reaching out to some of the local galleries and coffee shops and things like that in my area. The first one that I was in was actually out in Kent. It was McKay Bricker Frames or Black Squirrel Gallery. So I was out with them. I kind of had like a revolving exhibit, I guess. As one piece would sell, I would put in another one in there. I probably had between 10 and 20 in there throughout that time, probably closer to 20 throughout that time. I was in there for about 6 months to a year. And then from there, like I said, I just kind of kept reaching out to businesses, primarily through Instagram and email. So after the Black Squirrel Gallery, I was in Generations Coffee, which is out in Columbiana, so that's about an hour and a half ish away from here. And then a little bit more recently, I actually did a benefit art auction. So I partnered with the Stark County Hunger Task Force, and I donated I want to say three pieces to them, and they put together what was called Pallet to Pallet, kind of a little play on words there. Uh-huh. So they helped to they help to fight poverty and things like that throughout Stark County. So they're partnered with a bunch of emergency food pantries. And this is, I want to say it was their 27th or something like that art auction. And all those proceeds went to try to help raise money so that they can continue doing the awesome stuff that they're doing. Unfortunately, this year, because of COVID, we weren't able to have the actual actual event. So they did it all virtually. But all of that money still went to an awesome place. And then right now, like you said, I am in Looking Glass Gifts and Gallery. They're a really cool store. I like their model a lot. They have all kinds of awesome art in there from pretty much all over, I would think. I think I have five pieces in there currently right now. So still a little bit small, definitely trying to expand a little bit more. But, I mean, really for me, it just kind of boiled down to once I kind of saw that it was possible, just continuing to reach out, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I mean, I would certainly wholeheartedly echo your sentiments about Looking Glass. We interviewed them for the show. I've been in there several times. You know, Cuyahoga Falls is really becoming an arts community. As is our neighbor Stowe, in a way that I would not necessarily have expected. I lived there for 5 years. It was not the vibe I got, but you know, they've done this really cool thing with the traffic boxes where they're painting them, and they have a public arts commission. We have a public arts, I don't know if they call it a committee or a commission or what, in Cuyahoga Falls. And there's going to be some really cool art stuff happening, you know, when this freaking pandemic finally hopefully slows down and we can return to some sense of normal.
Right.
But I also wanted to pay some special attention to your mention of this this charity thing that you did. You seem to have a passion for community, not surprising given that you're a school teacher and especially an intervention specialist. You know, one thing that you haven't mentioned is that you actually donate a painting to Cuyahoga Falls City Hall. There's a picture of you with Mayor Don Walters on your Instagram page, handing him a cool little Poorhouse 27 original. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, of course. So I actually just kind of reached out to him on a whim. I really like a lot of the things that he's done with the city. I think that he's doing an excellent job. So I reached out with him and told him that I would like to donate a piece either for himself or if he would like to hang it up in City Hall. And he actually emailed me back fairly quickly. So after that, I went ahead, I made a piece that In my opinion, I tried to make it a representation of a topographical map of the Cuyahoga River, or at least a small portion of it. So I was able to go in, meet him, meet some of his team, and deliver that to him. It was definitely an awesome experience. And I'm looking forward to hopefully working with them more in the future. You mentioned that art committee or that art commission. I'd love to potentially be a part of that, depending on what that looks like in the future. So hopefully that could be something that could happen.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, it's, you know, it kind of stopped and started just because of, and stopped, yeah, just because of the pandemic. And I know there is a full committee. You know, we have a great organization, Collide Cuyahoga Falls, here. So I know that at least some of the people involved with that are on the committee.
Oh, awesome.
As well as one of our co-hosts of the show, Bart Sullivan, his dad is Tom Sullivan, who also has pieces in Looking Glass and...
is a
big deal in the arts community here. So I believe he's actually on the commission as well. So
that's fantastic. I'll definitely have to stop in and check out some of his work.
Yeah, he's the one with the weird rocket baby in the window. Everybody knows the rocket baby. That's Tom. Yeah, a lot of great arts stuff happening in the city, and you are now a part of that. So congratulations on all your success on the internet and here at home, and your work graces the walls of my home here, and I saw that on your Instagram page, and it's on mine, and we'll share that whenever we get this episode up so people can check it out. But I think it's one of those techniques that a lot of people gravitate toward. It's just cool. It just is, you know.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple like that. It's just cool. I had a friend who was a sign painter many, many years ago, back when they still would, like, you know, duplicate signs by, like, hand painting them. And he had some, like, of the, like, plywood sort of material that they would use for some of the signs that he cut up into these, like, 4x4 squares, 4-inch by 4-inch squares. And they're all different colors, and they look like poor art. And I don't think he meant them as that. I think they were just, like, you know, some media that was laying around that, you know, when he was working on other stuff, things got mixed together and kind of swished around and whatever. And they're teeny tiny little pieces, and I have them. I have four perfect little shelves in my kitchen window that I put some plants on, some teeny little plants. And behind each teeny little plant is one of these little pieces. And I think maybe just having those around my house for, God, maybe 20 years, I just, you know, was drawn to this technique. The way these pieces look, and to have these ginormous 24 by 36 paintings on my wall is just fantastic. Signed by you on the back, and I even put them in frames. So, and they look great in the frames, don't they? I know you saw the picture.
Yeah, those pictures that you sent me are awesome. Thank you very much. And I'm really happy that you like the paintings. So thank you.
Yeah, and you know what? Everybody else is going to like your work, too. So everybody needs to definitely check out Poorhouse27 on Instagram. Are you on other social media, Facebook? You're on TikTok?
So right now I'm primarily on Instagram. So it's Poorhouse27 on Instagram. I do have a Facebook page. I don't post there quite as often as I should. But my Facebook page is just Poorhouse. And then I'm working on a website as well as an Etsy page, too. So that should be up here in the coming months.
Awesome. And so, like, let's say I'm a Cuyahoga Falls community member and I'd like to buy a painting. I don't have a lot of money. What is the what is the price range, more or less, of your work?
So my cheapest paintings actually start around $10.
Oh, wow.
So I have very small, kind of like what you were describing, out of wood. So I have very small, I call them postcards. And those postcards, what I actually do is they're for exactly what you were describing. So they're between $5 and $10. And then when someone purchases those, if they come back to me and return that postcard to me, I'll actually take 20% off of their next commission.
Oh.
So that's kind of what I like to do with those for people, like you said, that would like to purchase the art but don't necessarily have the funds. So that's about where it starts. And then anything on canvas with me starts around $25.
Okay. Right on. Well, we got to ask you the hard question. We ask everybody this question. We hope that people haven't listened to previous interviews so they don't see the question coming, but it's important to us to ask this, and it's the most difficult question. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
All right, here we go. What is the best restaurant in Cuyahoga Falls?
Oh, man. Well, I'm kind of biased on this one, but for me, that would probably be the Works. The Works down on the riverfront on Front Street.
Yeah.
So if you haven't been there, I don't know if you have or not, but I think that their food's awesome. They have that full speakeasy in the basement with the separate menu, and then their VR and their bowling is pretty cool, too, as well as all their live events. But like I said, I'm a little bit biased to that. So.
Yeah. You have you have a connection. We don't have to talk about what the connection is. Let's say the Works was closed for a private event, and you had to say to the people of the Falls Cast something besides the Works.
I'd probably go with Burntwood Tavern. Okay.
All right, that's fair. You know what? You've answered this question the easiest of anybody we've ever interviewed. So good on you. Most people, you should hear the politicians we interview, man. It's, you know, they've got 10 favorites and they're all in their ward. So, but that's okay. We understand.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
We understand. It's okay. Well, Eric Bramer of Poor House 27, thank you so much for joining the Falls Cast. We really appreciate it. We can't wait to get this up so that people can check it out and hear about your journey to becoming a poor artist. Not a poor artist, but, you know, a poor artist. We hope that people will check out your Instagram and that you'll get lots of commissions and sales from this interview, and that you'll be able to continue to thrive and get all the therapeutic value out of this you possibly can. So congratulations, nice work, and we hope to hear from you soon.
All right. Thank you very much, and thanks for having me on tonight.
Falls Cast is a production of the Falls Free Press in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. Please check out the Falls Free Press at fallsfreepress.com or on social media at facebook.com/fallsfreepress. We thank you for listening to this episode, which was recorded and edited by Bart Sullivan. Please subscribe to our podcast and tell your Call to Falls friends and family so they can listen as well.
Oh, it's like, I'm not sure. I'm like, is this sinuses or is this COVID?
It's allergies.
Spin the wheel of what is it?
What is it? So.